Good morning, or good afternoon, everyone. My name's Brian McLaughlin. I'm the interim fire chief here in Sitka. This is my first meeting, so I apologize for any clunkiness that happens as a result. But we're gonna get through this together. So I appreciate everyone being here. Gus, you want to do a roll call?
All right, we're going to do roll call. Chief McLaughlin.
Here.
Trish White.
Here.
Adam Horton, he's excused. William Spivey.
Not here.
Not present. Mariana Robertson.
Here by Zoom.
Zoom. Okay.
Oh, other Mariana. Yeah.
Amy Zanuszewski.
What was that one?
Amy Zanuszewski. Is that how you pronounce it? Scott Wagner.
Yep, here.
Marianne Hall. Present. Chief Hall. Sergeant Ewers.
He
He's
will
ex
not
he's
be here.
excused.
Yep.
And Zach Carlson.
Present.
Present. All right. I believe we have a quorum.
Right. Morning. All right. And could you tell us your name?
Amy Zanuszewski.
Yeah, all right. Common spelling.
Common spelling.
Gotcha. All right. I'm gonna put Z. All
Yes.
right. All right. We have a quorum. Thanks for everyone to everyone for being here. We'll go to item three, welcome and introductions for new members. It is me. I'm one of the new members. Chief Hall is also new to the LAPC, and also William Spivey for search. He's not here today, but he is chief of operations for search, I think. But we all got voted in recently, this last month, month and a half or so. Glad to be here. Item number four, agenda changes. Gus, do we have anything? Any agenda changes for anyone?
Believe we do not have any agenda changes at this point, unless anybody else speaks up.
No. All right. Hearing none. Moving on. Approval of last meeting's minutes from March. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
I move we approve the minutes from our March meeting.
I'll second.
Okay. And go. So, any objections to approving the minutes? Hearing none, we'll call that approved. This is a very agreeable group. I appreciate you guys. All right. Yes, it's coming. It's coming. All right. Public participation for items not on the agenda. So I guess, sir, that would be. This is your chance. You have nothing? Okay. All right. We're glad to see you, regardless. Do you want to just make something up? You got time. The floor is yours. All right. All right. And let's see. Okay, so nothing for public participation. Communications. Communications. Okay. Ham operator as well. Okay, great. Do you have anything to add for communications?
We should have a fair bit of nationwide growth and local hand levels. We have Pioneer Park, if you want to just go out there Saturday and so and see some good growth.
At Pioneer Park. All right. For if you couldn't hear that online, June 27th, right? June 27th, there's a nationwide ham operator drill in Pioneer Park. And anyone can just kind of go out and observe what's going on. Oh, and you get to play theirs. Since there'll be someone there with the FCC licensing, so anyone can use the radios as well. Great. And what time is that at? At least.
Yeah, 9 to 6.
Okay, 9 to 6. 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Right.
Can I ask Todd, will that be in the paper or other PSAs or anything? Okay. Sure.
Sorry, I can't totally hear you from the Zoom end, but I know there's a PSA that will go out on KCAW. So
yes.
Thanks for getting in touch with us for that.
And just for the record, Mr. Spivey has also shown up. So we have a quorum, but welcome. It's good to see you. We just introduced you as a new member along with Police Chief Hall and myself as well. So welcome.
Yeah.
Oh, you have a seat up here if you'd like.
Particularly private inside of the
it is. We're also going to determine the city's budget for 2028 while we're here. Police department gets all new cars again. All right. Any more on communications? We're up to item number 7 currently, sir.
I can just give a quick note from KCAW. Just we're communications, so I haven't spoken in a while. I think actually we were talking mostly about the federal funding rescission last time I was here. We were worried about those impacts on the station and our ability to maintain our operations. I'm happy to say that we had incredible community support and some philanthropic support in fiscal year 26, which we just closed. We were able to keep our operations steady. We project we'll be able to do the same for fiscal year 27, which is fantastic. We're still a little worried about fiscal 27, but we're more worried about fiscal 28 and beyond. So keeping a close eye on that. And I'm in DC right now to, actually I just met with our federal delegation to continue to advocate for resumption of federal funding to particularly rural, remote, and tribal serving radio stations, in largely in recognition of our service in emergencies and emergency preparedness. So that's my very brief update from us.
Great. What is your fiscal year? Is it June to July?
It's July 1 to June 30th. Yeah.
The same as ours. Great. Well, congratulations. That's really good to hear.
Thank you.
Anything else on communications? All right, moving on. Committee reports. We'll start with Zach Carlson and Hazmat Calls.
Hello, everyone. From our last meeting in March, we've had quite a few hazmat responses. I'm trying to keep it to anything we've responded to and performed any tasks such as containment cleanup. Back in March, we had a propane tank leak downtown on Lincoln Street. We stopped the leak and disposed of the tank at the scrapyard. We had a few diesel leaks. The following month, we had a diesel tank leaking on Lincoln Street, and it sounds like the leak was contained to just around the tank. Beginning of April, on A Street at a residence, we had a diesel tank leak with possibly leaking into a creek nearby. Smell of diesel was in the creek, but we could not find a sheen. We had containment and confinement done and turned over the Coast Guard, and DEC was notified. That's usually our process. If anything enters the waterway, potentially going to the ocean, U.S. Coast Guard and DEC will be notified. In May, we had a diesel tank leak in a boiler room. Sounds like the leak was contained to the boiler room and did not leave the building. The last couple of weeks, we've had some calls up on Jarvis Street, beginning of June. We had a propane smell in the area. The people who called it in found some RVs up there and turned the tanks off on those RVs. One of the RVs that we investigated had the smell of propane inside of it, and we just performed ventilation and problem solved. Last week, there was about a mile-long oil slick or fuel slick noted on HPR. We could not find the source, and it was too dispersed to do any kind of cleanup on it. Because it crossed the creek on the roadways, Coast Guard was notified for that as well. Last Thursday, we had a fishing vessel taking on water in the channel. It was being moved by another boat to the work float. We provided a dewatering pump to it. As far as I know, it didn't sink. Coast Guard and Harbors were on scene for that, and Coast Guard was ready to respond for any possible hazmat release from that boat. And then this morning, we had an unattended vehicle fully submerged at Back Beach. We removed the car. Firefighters responded and dive responded. We were able to get the car out of the water with our fire truck. There was oil and gas on the car, unknown how much was known, and U.S. Coast Guard and DC were notified for that as well. That's all I got.
Any questions on hazmat? All right, great. Good afternoon, Mr. Mosier. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm filling in as the assembly liaison. Katie Riley is a primary backup, and she wasn't able to come today.
Sure. Have you been up to the table before? Are you comfortable up here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'm usually over there hiding on the side, but that's okay.
Great. Well, welcome. We're glad to have you. Next on the agenda for 8B is Sitka Fire Department EMS cruise ship calls, or kind of how our emergency services are being used outside of the local residents and stuff. So what I have for discussion is just kind of a comparison of last year from January 1st to now compared to this year. And for the most part, we're about on track. To this point last year, we had about 506 total calls, and we're at 471 total calls this year. So a little less, but pretty much on track. Most of those are clearly residents, but we've had to date, I think 16 total calls for the cruise ships passengers specifically, whereas last year we were about 17, 18. So we're right on track with what our norm is. We do spend a fair amount of time moving cruise ship passengers around. I think on Monday we had basically three ambulance calls going simultaneously, two in town, one for the cruise ship, and then another one later that day. Working very closely with Mount Inchcape Medical Center's emergency room staff to make sure all those patients get treated coming off the ships and from town. But overall, no significant changes in numbers from last year to this year. I'm not totally sure if we've had changes in numbers of total passengers at this point, but that's what we're seeing. Pretty standard numbers for us as far as your emergency services responding to in town and out of town. Quick percentage, I guess. This time last year, about 35% of our calls were non-resident, and we're at 25% this year. So a little lower in the number. So any questions on that? Great. All right, up to item number 9, unfinished business. We'll start off with the LEPC Emergency Operations Plan, All Hazards. I had the good fortune of reading this cover to cover recently, and it has been updated as of 2011. So there's a little bit of work that needs to be done on it. What I would like to ask the group here, because this is my first time and I'm learning, is who is the audience for this document? That's an honest, open-ended question, I guess. Do we know what the direction of this is for?
Once they're there, then we have a plan. So it's like the paper requirements, and then they're all dependent using the checklist for what the thing looks up and happens.
Okay, Marianne, I know you can't hear. I'll fill you in as soon as we go. So the response was it's a legal requirement and provides a checklist for what to respond if something happens. Anyone else have any other? So go ahead, please.
No, thanks, Todd, because that's exactly what it is. And I know it's a requirement, but also depending on what the emergency is, it was sort of a template for folks like, let's say, managed camera reps versus plane crash, that sort of thing. So of who's all involved. And we've struggled with trying to make it non-personal and over the years, and trying to make it so that it could just be this template and everybody knows what their job is. But that's one of the best questions. Who is our audience?
Sure. Yeah. All my questions are good, just for the record. As we go forward, I only have good questions. I reading this, the way I interpret it is it's a good notification to hand to anyone in the community and say, hey, this is kind of what we're watching for. And in general, what we can provide. The first about 40 pages are kind of a history lesson of emergencies that have happened here and what kind of capabilities we have had. And then in volume 3, we get into what are the actual physical resources we have in town, whether it's from the hospital or harbors or anywhere in the city, you know, down right down to ATVs and vehicles. One of my favorite things, which shows you how dated we are is in the what to bring to the emergency operations center list is a VCR and DVD player, which I love. I might actually still have one so I can bring one from home. That said, what I don't see in here is here's what we're actually going to do. There's some, for instance, in Weapons of Mass Destruction chapter, there's, hey, here's some symptoms you could look for in people. Like all of a sudden, if 30 people in town are sick with the same strange sickness, there might be a biological hazard. Yes, sir.
Big binder, but when you got preparing, you know, behind the primary dispatch by the window at that shelf, a really big binder
Right.
as you know, Green River failure, you know, power outage, this, that.
Yes.
So that I'd start there if you want to look at details of what needs to happen.
So, what we're saying is a lot of those binders are in the police chief's office, and I will gladly hand as much of my work off to the police chief at any point as I can. I also have all those binders in my office as well. So this document is not necessarily a how-to; it's a what's there kind of document, and I think this is a document that we have so that anyone in the city, in town, in the community who is interested can look and go, all right, well, these are the threats we might see, and these are the general capabilities we have in town. Does anyone see it as anything more than that? Chief
Well,
Ball.
I think it's a one, it's outdated. I've looked at it as well. And threats have changed. Right now we have drones and other types of things that are used for different events. I think maybe Chief, you and I and some others, we just start looking through and update, go through what FEMA has updated, also work with the Alaska Emergency Management and see and mirror some of those policies and procedures or responses, so we can be a little more up to date than where we are currently. In our even our communications have changed, our radio towers have changed since some of that has been done. You know,
Right.
so maybe we just look at it, come up with a start going through some of the updates. Not the whole thing doesn't have to be updated, but there's certain things that should be added to it,
Sure.
maybe to make it a better response, a more technological response for sure, because some of our stuff's a little bit, you know.
Yeah, could you tell me more about these drones? Is that like a VCR?
Yeah, it's similar like a VCR, but they
Yeah.
fly around.
Okay, gotcha.
You know.
So
Yeah.
I guess if I would comment also, you know, I was part of the community tourism task force, and I think we heard some concerns from the community that the city wasn't prepared. If cruise ship caught on fire and you had to evacuate everybody,
Right.
what would the plan be? So I'm not sure of any of those other types. And also, you know, it is also to reassure the community that we're thinking about it, and we at least have a somewhat of a plan in place for no matter what the issue may arise. But I think it's broader. You know, the audience is some in the community. Want to look and see what our plan is. So,
Sure. And
yeah.
a history lesson for me, I guess, in 2011, we weren't getting 600,000 cruise
No.
ship passengers a year, right?
No.
So, as Chief Hall mentioned, you know, our threats have changed a bit. So that
Right.
seems like a very valid thing. And honestly, one of our biggest concerns from a recent emergency planning meeting we had was, all right, the tsunami comes in right now, and most of the cruise ship passengers are in town. What do we do
Right.
with them, right? And so that dumping of 3,000 cruise ship passengers emergency is kind of, I think, a
Yeah.
big one for all of us.
And then that's under new business too to talk about more, but for the signage at least. Yeah.
Sure. Yep, and yep, we will also get to the signage. So I just kind of wanted to bring, that's again being kind of the new kid here. I kind of want to bring that up as a discussion item. What we want, how we want to go forward with this document, if we are, and what who is our like who is our intended audience, and what do we want to provide them with? You know, what is it been, what is beneficial to them in this document? And I think there is a lot of good stuff, but a lot, all the resource vehicles or the vehicles listed are all in the 1900s, you know, 1995 Chevy Suburban. None of these vehicles exist anymore. So there's obviously a lot of updating that has to go on in here. Any further comment on this document? Ideas, thoughts?
And just that I like the fact that some of these things, to clarify, I got an email with the packet, but it just has the agenda. It doesn't actually have the packet. So I'm a little unprepared here. Katie normally goes these, and I got the I said I got the agenda, so I know what we're talking about. I don't have the depth of the packet, but I definitely agree that I think that updating things is absolutely crucial. And things like that Bill said, or Scott said about the cruise ship passengers. If there's a tsunami, where do we put them? There's going to be panic, things like that. Local citizens, for the most part, know what to do, but you're going to have all these people wandering around, milling about, not knowing what to do. That's kind of very important. Lance actually mentioned something to someone about, or to a couple people, a couple assembly members, about the possibility of us putting signs, bigger signs, more direction. And I don't know if honestly, it sounds scary, but if there was a terrorism, someone who wanted to just do something to hurt somebody, show they could hurt the US, they could rent a boat and pop a little a drone, a cheap drone on a bomb or a grenade on a cheap drone, do anything they want. Not that we have capacity to protect from that, I don't know. But and then there's also the, I don't know if the on the list is the volcano risk. Chris was super excited, or Craig was super excited about that when he heard about it. So I don't know how far he got on that.
Not very far. So I will say, as you mentioned, sir, all these volumes, this is one of them. This is the tsunami volume. This was updated in 2019, so we're a little bit more current, but obviously we need to do this. And what I'm working on is going through all of these, and right now they're fairly generic. They're FEMA, they're copied off of FEMA websites, right? Like, or not websites, but directions. But it doesn't specifically task who do I, as the emergency manager, call for this scenario, and I need that number. And so we're working on updating that stuff. But I have, I don't know, something like 300 binders of, it seems like, but I've got two bookshelves full of these that I'm going to be going through. That probably, I think volcanoes is in there, is one of them also. But yeah, Chief, we'll talk further, get a group together to start kind of bringing this into the 2020s, and see where we can get with updated.
I have one last comment. I'm not positive. I believe that one might be a public document, but some of our other response plans are not public
This one,
because
sure.
so you kind of keep them separate. Exactly what you're going to do may not be a pub part of the public document.
Right. This is my checklist of what do I do? This is like, here's our capabilities for the, right. Very good clarification.
Okay. That's a good point.
Anything else? Okay. All right. Thank you for the discussion on that. All right. Next, we'll kind of on that discussion of tsunamis and the locals and the cruise ship folks. Lance, yours brought up the concern of sufficient signage in town for all the people who don't live here, who don't know where to go.
Business first.
Isn't that this the shelters and evacuation for emergencies? Oh. I thought that was on. All right. Forget Lance for now. We'll come back to that guy. Shelters. So the next item is shelters and for evacuation during emergencies. Chief, you were in the meeting that was at the fire hall. I know the discussion was the primary shelter is the high school. Keat becomes the emergency operations center. Is were there, and this discusses a few of them, but was there talk from the school district at least of like spillage over to say Blatchley or Hoots or anything else for shelters? I guess maybe Hoots is too low, but
No, there was the discussion about which on here evacuation for pets did come up in that meeting, and where just behind the office there where the school board is, they were talking about maybe having a availability to put families with pets. They got an open space back there, but I was going to follow up with another meeting with them. The answer to your question is no, that we didn't really come up with a solution, especially for the pets aspect. That wasn't something that the school was prepared or thought about at the time. There was some talk about evacuating folks from the cruise ship across up to the quarry because if a tsunami comes in, the cruise ship will leave and get off shore, and leave its passengers there. So they don't, they can do a lot more damage if they come on to our shoreline. And
sure.
So that was one of the things discussing and trying to get them to a quick place, and then also doing maybe a response drill with the tour boat folks or the tour bus folks to get them to where they need to be and how to respond. With say something happens and we got 5,000 people here in town, and how do we get them to a place that would fill up the school pretty quick, and then our local folks would be scrambling. So we just need to really get everybody in their locations. And the cruise ship, there were representatives of cruise ships said that they would also help. They would leave some of their staff behind to help organize their passengers and get them to a place near to the cruise ship terminals. And so, I mean, I propose, and I think you and I, you know, we've talked about this, is here in the very near future, just do some tabletop exercises with all of the folks involved, like the school, other folks and places that could be a good resource for an evacuation or shelter, and have those things worked out, as well as when's the last time the sirens and those things were tested. I know they probably do them on a cycle, but making sure that all of those things are still functioning, and do that on a regular basis. Since I've been here, I haven't heard a test yet. So
other than the noon test,
I believe they silent test as well.
Silent test.
Yeah. So if you ever hear like a staticky noise when you're near one, I think that's a silent test happening.
Oh, okay.
You are right. My part of my in brief was we're supposed to be able to talk through the sirens as well. Mm-hmm. And my understanding is that capability may be degraded to some degree, so we do need to do some testing.
Yeah, I think you can do it. It just sounds like you're going through a McDonald's drive-thru, you
know, yeah,
really bad speaker.
Would you like fries with that?
I will say though, the school has been, I mean, they know their roles. I think we have some things to equipment that we might have for evacuation. If you know, I've been in Sitka long enough to know if you let something sit enough long enough, it turns green.
Mm-hmm.
So if we got stuff in Connex boxes that's been in there for, you know, 2 or 3 years, or through all of the moisture and everything else, I mean, we should probably do checks for things that would go into the shelter, things that we might need for those responses, instead of just pulling them out the day that, you know, we need them. We need to make sure that they're in good proper use. Yeah. On a regular basis, and make sure they're not all, you know, funked up there with the moss and everything else that grows in the rainforest. So that's one thing I've instructed our folks to do, is get our Connex boxes that we have our response stuff in, just take everything out and make sure everything's good and clean. I know you've done that in some of your response trucks too. So just make sure we're prepared when it, you know, hopefully nothing will happen, but be ready if it does.
Right. Yeah. Parking stuff outside in the jungle here definitely grows some life. Yes, ma'am.
Just speaking of things that are prepared for emergency, since here y'all are new, and I'm not sure if I communicated this even at the previous LAPC meeting, but we do have what's called a radio to go kit. It's kit makes it sound small. It's many, many boxes of equipment to set up basically a secondary radio transmitter and system that's stored at Keat in the attic there. So that we could be.
I did see that. Yeah.
Okay, great. Excellent. Yeah. So that's.
I can at least verify there's boxes that say KCAW up there. Yes.
Yeah. And then there's many, many page instruction booklet. So the idea is that actually anyone could read the instructions and get it set up. But the hope is that we would be the ones setting it up and running it, that at least some of our staff will survive and be there to be your partners and letting folks know what's going on.
Great.
That's the worst case scenario. We would prefer to broadcast with our normal equipment, but just mentioning we replaced all of that. We had sent the original radio in a box to Puerto Rico after Hurricane Maria, so that came back to us last year.
Sure. I think some of the realities of communication in a situation like this is, I think radio is going to be pretty critically important, the sirens and the radio, because I think your phone networks are going to get bogged down very quickly. The other thing the operations manual here mentions is basically, you know, door to door, or the police and the fire driving through the communities with the loud hailers, making announcements as well. So it's, you know, and there's always Sitka chatters. But I think you're going to see a significant lack, and that's usually accurate with its information as well. I think you're going to see a lot of kind of reverting to radio and driving around town, just letting people know that way. So that's great. I forgot about the KCIW. So radio to go system is what you called it.
Yeah,
Great.
radio to go.
Great. Any other discussion on 9B? Currently.
Yes. Why can't we have a choice where we want to go? They put me at the last tsunami up in the school. I wanted to go up on Harbor Mountain because I was in that big earthquake up there in Anchorage in 1964. And the whole city of Valdez was wiped out. And they had to move the city up further. So why do we have to, why can't we have a choice where we want to go?
Primary. I mean, you can run up there, but there's nothing up there. There's no bathrooms or no buildings. So
There's plenty of woods.
There's nothing happening. There's nothing happening.
And the input there was there's no facilities or resources up at the top of Harbor Mountain. There is, I guess, the outhouse up there. You're right. But that's why. But yeah, so I guess with the way we look at it is, or the way we approach it from the emergency management standpoint is, where can I get people that provides shelter, water, and the basic survivability needs? So the high school becomes our primary thing. It's high enough, it's far enough back, or it's far back enough from the shoreline, and it meets kind of all the criteria. I imagine if you decide you want to go up Harbor Mountain, I don't know that anyone's necessarily going to stop you, but I wouldn't recommend it. It depending on what you have for survival.
And you couldn't really evacuate everybody up there. The one, the road's too small. People coming up, it would take you. You'd have to have everybody back down to get back down. So when you're talking about one person versus 8,000 people or 10,000 people, it'd be a difficult journey. But safe wise, yeah, you'd probably survive a tsunami on top of Harbor Mountain Road for sure. But to get that many people up there would be one a nightmare, and then
Dangerous too.
extremely dangerous.
Yep.
Yeah. So. The areas they pick are high enough, they believe, to withstand a tsunami, and then also has enough space and room for emergency services, so we can treat people that might be injured or pets, which is also on this, which we're working on. That was a good call by Chief Gayden. What do we do with the pets? Didn't think about that one, right? And so having those discussions still, but that's probably the reason why we have, and we may need more. I think on Bill, on your side at the hospital, the old hospital is a shelter, if I'm not mistaken. So if tsunami comes in and Japonsky's cut off, I mean, that's where your side of the island goes to, which is great that it's a hospital because, but you know, if we lose the bridge, then we have to figure out ways back and forth to ferry, hopefully the hospital. Especially that new beautiful hospital, be nice and looking good, right? You have anything on your side, Bill? Just as a question, I mean, is there any kind of policies, or have you looked at any of the tsunami response, maybe from at the hospital side, that we might be able to help you with or go over with you and your security folks? Or?
I have not, and I apologize only from the perspective that it's in the Red Book, and which is hanging on my wall, and I know that that's our go-to. I do know we are the secondary location if we can't get to the high school
Right.
that the hospital is. And of course, now that we're in transition, I did speak with Mr. Fountain yesterday as we were finishing up our IHS approval process, and the IHS was extremely complimentary at the level at which that building has been constructed and what it can withstand. And the comment was made, this is the single safest place to be in the state of Alaska right now for that sort of an event, whether it be tsunami or earthquake, or that it is extremely built to the highest possible.
Ah, fantastic.
And sir, I don't know if you can speak to this. The old building, once you've fully transitioned to the new building, does the old building remain, or is that as a potential shelter, or what becomes of the original MEMC?
The last time I was in this room, I was sitting right there, and they asked me that question too. And I said the same thing I'll say today. I don't have that answer. I appreciate the question. I appreciate the question. It's a very, I think that answer is coming soon now that we have a first patient day in place, which is the 27th of this month. I do know that immediately upon leaving that building, we will begin decommissioning the building. And what that means to us is we'll begin moving everything out that can be repurposed or
Sure.
replaced. And so beyond that, I unfortunately don't have that answer.
Okay. Yes, sir.
I thought I'd come up here rather than make you retranslate
I
me.
appreciate it. I was going to start speaking
Okay.
Spanish next time.
I can do that. There's some friends of mine and I, we spend around a lot of time thinking about this kind of stuff. And the only thing that you reminded me of today was one of the things we thought of is, of course, everybody knows to go up to Key. But it seems to me if we had a large enough event that it might be useful to have high ground markers in different places of the island. So if I'm out, I live closer to the industrial park, I don't have to drive all the way into town because they may not have the time. The road could be destroyed or something like that. So it'd be nice to have a city map of like, well, if you live here and you have to, you go here. If you live here, you go there and parcel it all out. And then the other thing that does is it concentrates people so you know where they are, right? So it's not like, other than the idiot that stayed in his house, it's like if I'm looking for people to help, here, and here,
Right,
right.
right.
is where you're going to hit first. And then they're going to tell you, well, I didn't see Fred come up here, or where does he live? And then you can move from there.
Right.
Additionally, there's you're talking about communications around town. There's a group called Radio Relay International, RRI.
It's called
They've done a lot of
Radio
early
what?
Radio Relay International.
Radio Relay
And
International.
they have a library page on their website, and they have a thing that they do in like hurricane response and stuff. It's a whole flyer that basically teaches non-radio people how to use FRS radios and stuff to organize their families and their neighborhoods. And one of the cool things they do that everybody I've talked to at the fire department hates this idea, but the ham guys could pick some of this up if you want, is like at the top of the hour, there's certain intervals where you can call on your radio and ask for help on a particular channel. And this is good, like if you're under your garage collapsed, you're pinned, but you're not like bleeding out or something, you can get on that thing and say, hey, I'm stuck, man. And then people know because they're listening for you. So it's sort of this whole organization of sort of like neighborhood help in addition to, disaster communication stuff, which kind of takes the load a little bit off other people because they can work it for their needs, and if it escalates to where they need some, public service stuff, then they can do it. Other than that, they can kind of all reach out to each other. So anyway, that's what I have.
Thank you.
There is a copy of a map like that exists. I know Chief Horn had a copy of it. I believe it's like NOAA or the state, someone has it, and that's kind of what we based the schools as being our zones for. It kind of shows a hot zone of color based off of risk.
The only one other thing we came up with one time was that, and this is really easy because you can take a GPS, right? And a few special markers with you and get up high enough on the road system and spike it with a specific sign that basically tells you you're now above the tsunami line. So, if you have to drive up Henway Street, the minute you see that sign, you're high enough, you can stop, panicking now. So that'd be a real simple thing just to mark, a tier across the road system. So anyway, I'm done.
I think that high ground marker signage is kind of ties into Lance's idea, but also is a pretty solid idea. So we'll circle back to that in a moment. Touching on evacuation for pets, I think with all the allergies in the world that currently exist, I don't think there's a world in which all the pets are brought into the high school with everybody. In my first thought is, or one of my thoughts was, or put them in the ball field that's being used as a dog park anyway, because what could possibly go wrong with 2,000 dogs in one pen together, right? What could possibly go wrong? But in an emergency, or you have a separate, all the parent families with animals go to Keat and everyone else goes to the high school. I don't know what the answer is, but I have a pet, you know, I have a dog. I would, it's so I get it. I'm it's something I'm concerned about too. But I don't think you bring them into the same shelter as everyone else. Aside from the sanitary, you know, dogs and cats are going to do their business where they're going to do their business. And that's just going to add to a situation that's already going to be very stressful and messy. So, I wasn't here for the last conversation about this. I don't know how far it went, but in the limited time I've thought about it, had to think about it. I would say, I don't know what the answer is, but I feel like the answer probably isn't they all go to the high school with everybody.
No, and I think one of the things is that they have somewhere near one of the places we find a shelter for the pets somehow, even if we have some quasi, you know, I talked to our animal control specialist too, you know, there's a way, I don't know how many dogs we have on the island or how many cats we have on the island, but it's, I'm sure there's quite a few thousand plus, you know,
be my guess.
We don't have 1,000 kennels, you know, or people could bring kennels and we can have them in an area, but it'd be an outside area.
Right.
Because people do have allergies. People have fear of dogs and cats. People who may have a medical condition, and that would aspirate, you know, that into a further thing. And so I think our suggestion would be that they would have their own evacuation place near one of the evacuation spots, right? Or they would have their own section at both, away from in a ball field or in a field someplace else. Unfortunately, that's a whole different level of preparation. I mean, you got to fence them in, you're talking about, you know, just 1,000, you're talking about 1,000 kennels, it'd be unbelievable. All dogs are different size, all cats are different size. I mean, it's,
and some of them are just jerks.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the people. But
I said, chances are if they're going to the high school or Keith, they're in their car, that their car is their kennel.
Yeah, some people, another thing I wanted to interject is not everybody's going to go to the evacuation place. Right. Like when there was one several years ago, before I was in the house I'm in now, I went up to Mount Edgecombe with my family. We had a big truck. We just sat there until we knew it was clear. And then we went down, went back home. And then since we found that our home is at a place that is in a safe level, so our plan is to just stay there.
Right.
So not everybody, I mean, there's probably still going to be a lot of people, but not everybody will go.
Agreed.
Well, Zach makes a good point too. I mean, the ferry, when you bring an animal on the ferry, it stays in your car, and you take it out to use the restroom, you know, every so many hours they let you do it, but that might be the deal. Leave your animals in your vehicle like you would at the ferry, and then every now and then we'll have a place where they can go relieve themselves, and then keep them back in the vehicle that they arrive in is their kennel.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep. Nice job, Zach.
Yeah, good job.
Solved.
Thousands of kennels.
Thousands of kennels and cars. Going back a little bit to the cruise ship discussion, I did want to say that I don't know if there's a system on Earth that's better for personnel accountability than the cruise ship systems. So the one thing we have going for us, like I think Chief, you mentioned, maybe that the cruise ship plans to leave some of their people here to do some of the corralling and accountability, which is good. Everyone on the cruise ship generally has a badge of some kind. And the cruise ships are very good with accountability. So that will be one strength we have in that kind of situation, is find the cruise ship representative and have them corral their people. And it's not going to be pretty initially, but we can eventually start getting people to their individual boats or the group of their individual boat stuff. But that is definitely an updated hazard we need to add in here of what we do with cruise ship evacuation. So I guess anything, yes.
One thing I think we touched on last meeting about the cruise ships was reaching out to Mount Edgecombe High School, because they have the giant gymnasium as well as dorms that most likely wouldn't be being used in the summertime,
mm-hmm.
potential sheltering for cruise ship passengers. But I believe Madison High School is going through a pretty big admin transition, so we decided not to reach out about that yet.
Sure.
You know, when we talk about our audience, it's our, for the most part, it's the local Sitkin. So any of these things that we can put out for information, and we used to do kind of a checklist thing, what would you do in an emergency? And that gets just people thinking about their own family, their own pets, and just knowing the options. We don't have to maybe fix it as much. It's just maybe getting people to start thinking about that sort of thing, that they aren't going to be able to bring their pet to Keet. That so what would you, you know, what can you do if you're in one of those homes that needs to evacuate in whatever situation? I think just that part of our mission is super important.
Thank you.
Sorry. I'm not supposed to talk too much as liaison, but
you're doing great, Katie.
I think that's super helpful because yeah, most of us, like, I don't always think every day like about my emergency pack and this and that. Like I said, I live in a place where I know I can just go home, and we have not a crazy amount, but we have enough food for a week or two, which is not enough. But I don't go around like I don't have a list. I don't have, you know, go bags and things like that, or things I haven't really gamed out to your plans to do for things other than a tsunami. So
sure.
Getting like things like that to the public is would actually be very helpful.
Anything further on unfinished business that kind of remains unfinished? Okay. New business. So Lance, you were talked to, it sounds like most of us, about signage for evacuation, really focused on getting the cruise ship passengers where they need to go. So we have one scenario where they're down at the cruise ship terminal and they're going to cross the street into the quarry. And then the other scenario is they're everywhere else in town. They could be out at the Bears. They could be at the Raptor Center. They could be Totem Park here, right? Those are kind of like, I think, the big key areas. So the proposal was petition to the cruise line industry to purchase some directional signs for where to go. Work with them to get them in the right places, but work with the cruise ship line to figure out where we want to put the folks, but then ask them to help fund some additional signs. Do you know, Chief, was he looking at permanent signs like poles in the ground or A-frame portable signs? Do you know what he was looking for specifically there? That's what I would think too.
And another source of, in addition to just asking them to fund them, there's also the exploration of using CPV funds, the head tax funds.
Okay. Past tsunami warning takeaways. He said traffic was at a standstill. People will not be loaded onto buses. Tourists. They'll need to walk to the high school and to Keet, and need signs to route people that are on foot to those evacuation areas, especially folks that don't know how to get there. Because the cruise ships, as we mentioned, are going to get underway because it's way better for them to be a mile offshore when this happens.
Yeah, what I gotta do is get their people safely here. They're out there, then it's back.
Come right back in. Yep.
I guess the big issue was the last one Lance was working that day, and that's caught her experience. I guess the traffic was pretty unbelievable.
Turn your mic on.
Sorry.
Man, I hate taking direction from the fire department. It happens to me all the time.
You're doing well, though. You're learning.
Got to be, and part of that is because, you know, we don't have a whole lot of traffic signals here. We have, two traffic lights in the whole town, right? Catalan and HPR, and then the one over here, Centennial. So it gets backed up, and we're looking at maybe some ways that we could control traffic in an event like that to free it up a little bit or make it a little bit more steady where it's not just total massive chaos. I don't know how they're going to manage with people. Say we had a warning today and there were 3,000 people downtown. I mean, I'm not confident that would be the smoothest thing in the world as we sit here today.
I remember somebody saying, I think that we open up the bench lands and all that stuff gets opened up too, though, right? So those places, for example, let's say we had a town full of cruise passengers, could they not just, I mean, one of the routes could be just take them up to the bench land. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can open that all up, but you could get 12 buses lined up full of people and just be there. And then that's contained and you don't have to worry about it. So it'll ruin my dog walking spot, but that's, you know, I'm willing to give that up for an emergency.
Everyone else's dogs are going to be there as well. It'll be great. yeah, I think the bench lines is a good option. So I guess conceptually now, it's a lot of signage, right? It's to get to corral everyone to the right spot. How is that? Lots of arrows, lots of signs. How do we, you know? So for just for instance, if they're coming from Totem Park down Lincoln, do we turn them on the road by Market Center, or do we get them all the way down to the light? Do we get everyone down here and then funnel them up Lake Street?
Well, I think we have an engineering department. I think the engineering department will have the best. I mean, that's what they do. They have programs that they can about what are traffic loads, and so maybe we bring this to the engineering department and have the suggestion on where they put these things at, planning and zoning. Get the engineer in and like, hey, how do we get these people here best? They have computer programs that help those things a lot smarter than I am for sure. And it's what they're built for. So we can go to them and see how many. It might not be that many signs as you think it is. It might just be getting them in the right place at the most visibility and what have you. We might have some also that are kind of the A-frame. If something does happen, we can have them get police cars and put them out in different places just to straighten them out. You know, those are pretty inexpensive and would be a thing, especially if we get traffic somehow. Sometimes traffic gets blocked, or if you have a car accident blocking part of the traffic and you can't get it moved real quick or whatever. Do you have an alternate route? You would have to have some of those barricade type signs to get them someplace else. So, but that's something the engineer can help us with. I think me and you can go and talk to the engineer and be like, hey, what's the best way for this?
Any concerns? Yes, sir.
Well, no, just along those lines, you likely want to reach out to DOT too, because depending on which street where you'd have to get their approval. Then I did chat with Lance about this as well. One thought I had was for the industrial park, you know, there are cruise ships, smaller cruise ships that tie up there too. So they're likely to need some additional signage in the park. There is pretty good signage for the dam failure for the muster areas, but I don't think there's any tsunami signs out there. So yeah, between the fortress and potential cruise ship at the dock, that's another, because they're obviously not going to walk back into town.
They say for GPIP, we just get them up to try and get them to Whale Park initially.
Whale Park or even up Blue Lake Road. I mean, that's currently the gate's locked. Can't drive up there now, but you can at least walk up there. Yeah.
So there's a lot of contingencies and scenarios there where we've got to get the engineers. I just bring the papers to the engineers. That's all I do. But we got to get them involved to figure out, kind of work those scenarios out from the different areas. Any other questions, comments on this one? The only concern I have is item E, where it says the police department will utilize the Sitka Fire Department four wheelers. No way, not a chance. We're not lending those out. Commandeer them. But I think this is definitely valid. I think we should probably look into this. This one kind of, this is almost a, while it's involved, an easier button to take off that could happen tonight, you know, or 10 years from now. But we have a whole bunch of people coming here, seeing this place that we live and spending a lot of money here, and we need to keep them, give them a safe route out of here. So I think that's kind of an easy one. Any concerns or questions with this idea in general? So that's all right. All right. Hearing none, we will call that one a win. Nice job, Lance. Guys all full of good ideas. Okay, so number 11, committee comments. Anything you'd like to add? Anyone on the committee that hasn't been added? We'll have that removed. good timing, though. Your comedic timing is right there. Chief,
just please note for the record that was an assembly member that kicked that, not anyone else here. That has nothing to do with the Zoom.
All right. Marianne, anything from DC?
Nothing from DC.
Okay. All right. Then, if nothing further, do I have a motion to adjourn this meeting?
So moved.
We have a motion.
Second.
All right. Meeting's adjourned. Thank you, everyone, for this was a super quorum. This was fantastic. So I'm really, really glad to see everyone here and appreciate your input and time. And we'll keep working together. And plan to kind of hear from me and Chief as we start to develop this. We look forward to your input to make this the right solution for the city. So thank you.
Thanks all.